Mark, have you ever been to a boxing match?
No.
Yeah, neither have I. Have you ever watched one on TV, though?
I actually think the answer is no.
I think same for me, but somehow I'm very, like, culturally aware of it. Maybe it's because I grew up watching Rocky movies.
Now, those I have seen for sure.
Yeah.
And I am, like, I did play, like, boxing video games. Like,
oh.
So I know, you know, Michael Buffer was for a long time, and I think his son now, like, does intros. He was like the famous "Let's get ready to rumble." Let's get ready to rumble.
Shoot for the captive ball.
And there's the game of the same name.
Ready to Rumble on the Dreamcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, I had it back in the day.
My brother had it, and I was a big fan.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess it's a big part of the culture, even though I don't think that we really have much interest in, like, seeing one in person.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird, too, because it's also very, like, esteemed, right? Like, you think about the Ocean's 11 George Clooney film, right? Yeah. Like, the heist takes place when all the money's going to be there because of, like, a marquee boxing match.
Yeah, it's just, like, a big deal. I don't know. I don't get it. I prefer my violence to come with, you know, shoulder pads and helmets. that's the kind of violence that I like to watch. But I mean, people have been doing it for a long time. I mean, obviously, you know, there's like pottery with images of, you know, nude Greeks boxing, right? And like, they've been doing it for thousands of years.
Really?
Yeah.
I know, like, wrestling for sure, but like, they were boxing back then too?
Well, of a sort, right? Boxing has sort of evolved over the years. And in fact, it was relatively late kind of in history, in the late 19th century, when they sort of reformed the rules into what we know of as boxing today. In fact, that's when they started, like, wearing gloves. It was in 1867, a set of rules known as the Marquess of Queensberry rules.
Yes. So I'm glad you said that, because, like, that's a term that sticks in my head. And I've always thought it was Marquis de Queensberry. I don't know if that's true or not.
See, that's a good question.
Because it looks French. Right, Marquis or something.
So that is Marquis, and this is spelled Marquess.
Oh.
And it's an Englishman.
Oh.
An Englishman named them. I think it's the Marquess of Queensberry. Maybe I don't know.
Oh, okay. So yeah, in my head, I guess I just subbed the spelling to Marquis.
Yeah. So he's like an English nobleman whose name is attached to these rules that he basically lifted from a Welsh sportsman. I mean,
that tracks for the English, right?
It was written by a Welshman and got the name of an Englishman attached to it because he was the one that, like, owned the land, I guess.
Yeah, very English.
Right. But in 1867, you know, they wrote 12 rules that sort of codified what modern boxing is and has become.
Fascinating. And?
Well, I'm going to test your knowledge of boxing a little bit. And there are 12 rules.
Okay.
I'm going to read you 6. And you need to decide which are from the original 12 rules of the Marquess of Queensberry rules and which are hallucinations of a generative AI friend.
All right.
I'll tell you this. I'm going to read 6.
All right.
And there are at least 2 real rules and at least 2 fake rules.
Oh, that's brutal. You're not going to give me like 3 and 3? Okay, that's fine.
At least, right. At least 2 of each. Okay.
All right, let's do it.
All right. A man hanging on the ropes in a helpless state with his toes off the ground shall be considered down.
False.
Do you want me to go through all of them first?
Oh, no, I want to do it. I want to do it one by one.
You want to do it one at a time?
Yeah.
That is a real rule.
Oh, goddamn.
If either man falls through weakness or otherwise, he must get up unassisted. The boxer has 10 seconds to allow him to do so. The other man, meanwhile, to return to his corner.
That's true.
That is also
That's
true.
Like the only boxing rule that I think I could have told you outright.
Yeah. A customary fee of no less than 5 guineas and no more than 10 guineas to be presented to the referee upon the match's conclusion.
True.
False.
Yeah. I mean, what's a guinea? I don't know.
I literally don't know. I mean, it's some kind of money.
Yeah. I mean,
is it a lot? Is it not a lot? Is it enough to keep him honest?
Where is it in relation to francs? And I also don't know the value of a franc, but it feels like that's appropriate. Like, I would read a book from like the early 1900s, late 1800s, and they'd reference guineas and francs.
I think a guinea is like English money.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
It's but part like the
franc,
the
franc was maybe just always around.
This is a whole other conversation, by the way, about like the history of British money. Do you know when they actually changed to have like 100 pennies in a pound?
No.
It's like the 1970s. Before that, they had this whole convoluted system of like shillings and half pence, where it was like, it was binary in nature, with like two of this makes four of that, makes eight of another.
Yeah, but I thought pennies were just like always part of that system, no?
Yeah, they were, but they didn't add up to 100 to a pound. It was something weird where it was like 2 pennies make a shilling, and 20 shillings makes a something, and 20 of that. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
And so it was never 100 pennies to a pound.
It was some weird number, right? And interesting. It was just, they did it. This is getting even further afield, but if you watch even like old movies from like, not even that old, like 80s, 70s in the United States, they're trading stocks, not in dollars and cents, but in dollars and eighths of a dollar.
What?
That was the unit they used. It was like
in the London stock, like an all stock
exchange? New York Stock Exchange, like in America in like until like the 80s.
Is that because it was based on the British like stock system?
I got to assume, but they just decided that like, you know, if it was, you know, moving in price less than an eighth of a dollar, it wasn't worth even like noting, I guess. And so if you wanted to bid up a price of a stock, you had to go in at least eighth of a dollar increments.
I got to say, I mean, it's weird, but like, I don't like, you know, auction houses and stuff have like minimum bid floors. Yeah. So like, sure, why not?
Now it's like, you know, fractions of a penny.
They do right. Whatever they want. Well, now it's, you know, computers. It's all digital. Yeah. So who cares?
Anyway, getting back to Marquess of Queensbury here, we're getting
I think I'm what, 1-4 right now?
Something like
1-3. I don't know. How many rules have we gone through?
We'll see what the judge's decision is at the end of this round.
Technical knockout. You know.
No gentleman under the age of 17, nor any lady, shall be permitted to wager on the outcome of a prize fight.
When did the Marquess make these rules?
1867.
True.
False.
Yeah, lads would have been adults by then.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. No shoes or boots with spikes or sprigs, wire nails, be allowed.
True.
That is true.
All right.
That is true. Each boxer to be permitted one designated second to attend him between rounds, who may provide clean water and a damp sponge for rinsing.
True. I've seen Rocky.
False. It's not a rule. There is a rule about allowing a second, but nothing about water and sponges.
Oh, okay. So like you're just nitpicking me now.
Well, it's more about the weird wording that the...
That's the fine. Yeah,
anyway,
that's fine.
I bring up boxing today because we're going to talk about a pinball machine that features boxing quite heavily, the Champion Pub.
Great.
Yeah. So the Champion Pub is a pinball machine that was produced by Williams, a classic producer, but released under the Bali name. So Bali is one of those legendary original kind of pinball manufacturers, and they were bought up by Williams in 1988, and Williams continued to release some pinball machines under the Bali name just for branding reasons, because it's...
But they did also release under the Williams name, right?
Yeah, concurrently. I'm not quite sure why, you know, how they decided to do which ones where, but this is a Bali machine, but in the Williams era.
Gotcha. So. And did you say what year this came out?
Champion Pub came out in 1998.
So
10 years after the Bali acquisition.
Oh, that happened in 88.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the Champion Pub. It's, I would say, one of the more unique machines. You know, a lot of pinball machines kind of look kind of samey with, you know, a couple ramps, a couple loops.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some like wire tracks for the ball to go down.
Certainly hard to innovate in that space.
Champion Pub, designed by a guy named Pete Petrovsky. I'm not quite sure how you say his name.
Okay.
He designed something that is, I think, truly unique in the world of pinball. There is a toy boxer in the middle of the ring that you got to hit, but it's not immediately visible when you start playing a game.
Okay.
So when you play the game, you see kind of this big punching bag in the middle. And obviously, you see something in the middle of a pinball playing field and you...
I'm going to hit it.
You hit it. You hit it enough times and then it turns around and it's actually like a boxer whose arms will like move and like, you know, attempt to punch you. And you can kind of start a fight with the boxer.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the goal of the game is to take place or to take part in fights in a bar, basically. It's kind of this underground boxing league or something, and you're working your way up the ranks, and you got to qualify for fights by training and then, you know, punch out the other boxers with your pinball.
Okay. And so training is hitting the punching bag.
There are a few different ways to train. One of them is kind of hitting the punching bag. That's kind of your standard training.
Okay.
But then the other things that are really unique about this machine are the like training apparatuses.
Okay.
Up at the top of the playfield. There's a rope jumping exercise that you can get into, where if you lock the ball in a certain spot, it lets you jump over this metal rope that kind of spins around, and you got to time it to jump the ball with like a, I honestly don't know how it does it, like a magnet or like a piston.
Wait,
or something.
So this is like a physical, this is not like a digital.
No, it's like
video
a
mode.
The ball is kind of locked in place and this wire jump rope thing goes around it and you jump the ball over like in succession. And the more times you jump over it, like all the right. better training you get.
That's cool.
There's a speed bag too, which is, you know,
okay.
like the punching, you know, the bag hanging from the roof and I don't know. It's what boxers do.
So right? How does that work? Is there like two flippers up there and I'm just like whipping the ball back and forth? Or like what's
yeah, there's
on?
Like a speed bag and two like fists that are kind of attached to the buttons. You know, you hit the right button, it's the right fist, left button, left fist, and you're punching the ball into the bag.
Okay.
So there's just like all these weird, unique kind of boxing things. And in the middle of the playfield where that giant punching bag and the boxer will be, there are these kind of curved ramps that are unlike just about anything I've seen in most pinball machines. They're kind of, I guess, like some of the ramps we see in like Whitewater we talked about before.
Okay.
There may be a couple other machines that are kind of like it, but they are very unique in my opinion among pinball machines. So this is a really interesting machine. I think, yeah, it's worth checking out. Any questions?
Do you have any idea on like, you know, how often do you have to train to start a fight? Or like, do I just have to hit the fighter? Like, I think a lot of games work in threes. Like, am I hitting the fighter three times and I win? Like,
yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but you got like a health meter in the middle of the play field. That's just like a series of lights that go from like 0 to 10 or 15 or something like that. And you build up that health meter and you get certain value of health based on how many times you hit it or how.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure exactly how it works, but you build that up, start the fight, and then your opponent has a health meter that you're taking down.
The only other thing that I think I'd like to know going in is I try to seek out ball locks early because I think an early multi-ball usually helps me get a better score. Are there any multi-balls or anything like that that you're aware of from your kind of initial look at it?
I think there are a couple. There's one behind the boxer that you have to kind of shoot around him sort of and get back there.
Orbit almost?
Yeah, I don't know if you call it an orbit or like a loop or something, but it's like a back shot and you kind of get the ball stuck back
there. I think that has a different connotation with the youth these days.
Okay.
Don't.
Okay, boomer.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, let's.
No other questions, but there is at least a multi-ball to be found.
Yeah, there's a multi-ball on the playfield. So
great. I'm excited.
Yeah, let's go check it out. Okay, we're back. We've played a few rounds of the Champion Pub. What do you think, man?
There's a lot to unpack here, but let me just say I guess I'm a violent individual, man. I feel like I knocked it out of the park. I felt like a fighter.
Yeah, it's oddly satisfying to kind of hear the punches land when the ball hits, you know, the bag or the target.
Yeah, the sound effects for like the collisions are pretty cool. And there is something satisfying about like bashing that boxer toy that you had talked about.
Yeah.
Seeing it rotate around, you know, it tries to hide it with behind that boxing, the bag. And it's got like two little walls next to the bag to help obfuscate the fighter more. But it's hard to hide any toy on a pinball machine because
it's literally like under a field of glass.
Right. And like, you've got an aerial view. But I was still tickled when it turned around and I saw just how ridiculous
it
looked.
It's just kind of funny. He turns around and it's this like kind of, I don't know, like bulky, mustachioed, like Irish stereotype, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah. I mean, that was the word that popped into my head too, as an Irish stereotype. And that's not the first time the last time we're going to mention stereotype for this machine. So, you know, I think we're going to talk about it at some point. It's just worth mentioning. There is a lot that does not age well on this machine.
Yeah. Surprisingly, it's, you know, 25 years old and I think you said it, like, for whatever reason, they made some kind of artistic choices that probably had a couple of guys really like knee slapping in the back room of the design room, but did not particularly age well into our year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to hijack where you're going with that discussion. I'm sure that's one of your talking points.
Yeah, for sure.
So we can circle back to that wherever you have it.
Yeah. So the way we're going to approach this is the way we always approach it, and kind of unpack the machine in three different categories. Talk about the game design that counts, play field and sort of just the rule set of the game, and then talk about the theme of the game. And that's, I think, where we'll get into some of these issues and how they decided to kind of brand this game. And then hopefully end on just about kind of how fun the game is to play overall.
Great. So,
okay. Let's go ahead and get into it. I guess the design of the game, I'll go ahead and get us started there. Like, I feel like this was a really packed play field, like a lot going on.
Yeah. Yeah. They put a lot in there.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot to shoot at, but then additionally, just like there are all these different modes and things that you can light up, and you know the same shot over on the left that I think is like the extra ball scoop, but it's also like 10 other things, I swear.
Yeah, it starts like the spittoon
mode, the poker mode.
Yeah, any of the video modes come out of that. I'd call it more of a saucer than a scoop.
Yes, yeah, that's probably fair.
But and the extra ball, yeah, sort of in the lower left. If you think of like where the left out lane is and just go straight up like 2 inches, 3 inches or something, like that's where that shot is.
Yeah. And there's just a lot going on. And I'm kind of impressed with the way they laid it out, especially the use of kind of vertical space, which I think is a hard thing to get right in a pinball machine. For one, they got that big toy in the middle that kind of looms large. And yeah, you actually do get some kind of airtime on those ramps that lead up to it. There's these like,
yeah, those like ramps, those green sort of wedges.
Yeah. I don't know what to call those because they're so unique, I feel like. But I was afraid that every time I hit that, it was going to just drain down the middle. Like it was going to be out of control and whatever. And somehow they kind of tuned it just right to where it usually fell back on a flipper for you.
Yeah. And there's some advantage to that. Like when you start a fight or when you launch a ball for the first time, there is a big red stopper that like actuates and basically prevents a center drain.
Yeah.
And that lasts for, I think if you're good enough, the majority of each fight. And I think my assumption is as I kept playing, it felt like it was lasting shorter and shorter before it would kind of go back flush into the board. And then mm-hmm. center drain was a real scary option, but that was a nice way for the designers to account for the randomness, right? Like, there was at least once when I launched that ball up off one of those like green ramps, and you get like also kind of a quick side point. Like it's kind of cool that the game recognized headshots versus body shots against the fighters who were fighting.
That's wild.
And taking different, headshots were worth more. And so I did have like a couple of headshots that came off those green ramps and then got stuck in the fighter's arm because it's like bent at this like 30 degree angle or something.
Yeah.
And then like he turns and he whips his arm and the ball comes aggressively down and I think would have drained if it weren't for that stopper. And so like it's nice that they thought about this is gonna be a little crazy and like let's give the player an out. And it may have also, there was a period of time where I think Williams and Bali were experimenting with ways to get people back to pinball after sort of the arcade phase, where arcades had gone out of vogue. And so you saw a lot more of those like pins in the middle that like balls could bounce out of, but this was like a really unique way to keep the ball from draining.
Yeah. That stopper was very fascinating. Like a lot of times you'll have like a flashing light in that same position on the play field to say like, if you drain, it's, ball save, you're going to get it back.
Right.
And this did like flash a light, but it also just like physically blocked the ball from draining. And you get to some weird situations where like the ball is like resting on the stopper against a flipper and it's just sitting there.
I love that.
It's so weird. It's very, just feels like not right in pinball.
I couldn't make anything out. Like the few times I let that happen, I thought, oh, maybe like that's a great way to get like to the saucer or something. Like they, to their credit again, like that's not a shot that's ever advantageous for you.
Yeah. You pop it up and it just comes back down. But like, there's no easy shot to make off of that. Yeah, so that's really fascinating, I think. Other kind of design things, I think they have a unique ball launching mechanism that really stood out to me. You hold the launch ball button. There's no like plunger. You hold a button And there's this kind of almost like a roulette style game that you play and try and get some kind of bonus to when you release the ball, it launches and you get whatever bonus, you know, the spinner lands on.
Yeah. It's not the only time we've ever seen that. Cactus Canyon, for example, does that, right?
Oh, that's
but
right.
The
yeah.
difference that Champion Pub uses that I quite liked is Cactus Canyon uses a plunger and it's like, until the ball hits the play field, like the roulette wheel is spinning. In this one, you have full control because you're holding that launch button and the roulette wheel stops when you let go. So you have some real autonomy to choose what your prize is going to be.
Yeah. I feel like it's a really cool idea that I liked for about one game. and then it just started feeling kind of tedious.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a chore. And like, I remember you and I had the discussion at the bar about, you know, what should I be targeting here?
Like, yeah. And you figured it out and told me because I didn't realize that like 1 million points is peanuts. It's all about the door prize.
Yeah. And the door prize is their version of like the mystery scoop, basically. Yeah.
And the door prize could be anything. It could even be a million points.
Often it was light extra ball, which led to some pretty nice games.
Yeah. So like the best ones that I got were, you know, light extra ball, qualify for a fight without having to build up your meter. Yep. You could do like the poker thing sometimes.
Yeah, I think it lit poker. Like, I think it also, there was one that started a multi-ball. It might have started the one multi-ball that I actually unlocked otherwise, which is the like bar fight.
Yeah.
Actually, I also got, I guess.
There's like a multi-brawl too, I think they call it.
That's the one. That's the ball lock one. The other one is the bar fly fisticuffs or something.
Yeah.
Where you just basically mash the punching bag until it spells that, like those three words.
Barfly fisticuffs.
Yeah, I think it's that. It's okay. Something fisticuffs and the word bar. I'm not sure if it's fly. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
Yeah. As far as the other element of design that I think we really should mention is, and you talked about it before we left, was like those little widgets for training, right? The jump rope and the speed bags. And I was like, that's like a cool idea. How does that work in practice? Especially because we're visiting this game in 2024 and whatever machine we're seeing is, you know, 25 years old, 26 years old.
Yeah. And yeah, to your point, they're all old machines and they actually didn't make a whole lot of them.
Do you know what the run was?
Yeah. I have it written down here. 1369. So,
oh, wow.
Like,
it's pretty small,
very small run. And yet I seem to see them somewhat frequently.
Yeah. It's one that seems to have survived the ages pretty well. And I think it's probably a standout for like how packed the design is and like how interesting and unique it is compared to other machines. That jump rope mechanism was awesome. I loved it.
So cool. I really love unique physical things that you can do with a pinball, right? Because, you know, in a virtual video game, you kind of have like unlimited freedom. And so it's not interesting to see things like that, but
right.
Like who wants to jump rope on a Nintendo, right? Like,
well, I guess I'm a sucker because I guess I like those kind of weird push the button at the right time things, which is why I was so good at the jump rope.
Mike Tyson's punch out or something, right? I think you do.
You don't.
No, okay.
You don't do any. Well, certainly not in like the original like NES one. They did do Super Punch Out, and maybe there were things there. But I could think like Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. Like there are like little training mini games where you're like on a bench press or whatever.
I mean, that's like a whole genre of game that can be fun, but it's not as, I don't know, it's not as interesting to me.
Yeah, it's basically a rhythm game with a mechanical ball.
Right, and like, yeah. Seeing how they built it and like legitimately wondering how they designed it and made that physical thing, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's super fascinating to see.
I think there's got to be a magnet in there somewhere, but I don't know how they work.
You mentioned Punch-Out. The other thing that I liked about the design is that it sort of spiritually feels like Punch-Out. You know, that you're progressing up the ladder, starting with, and if you look at it, like each time you progress to a new fighter in the rank, because I think you start with like the 10th ranked fighter and then the 9th ranked fighter and so on and so on. And the 10th ranked fighter is like pretty split on their wins and loss record. And then the next guy has a better win than loss record. And like, as you climb the chain,
that's
like,
a nice touch.
It's very Punch-Out-esque in that way. And I'm kind of a sucker for stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't think I got past like 3 or 4 fights, but they did seem to be getting harder, where if you didn't beat the guy in a certain time, you were going to get knocked out.
Yeah, the basically whatever the timer is they set for the mode that decrements your health, it's getting shorter.
It's effectively a timer, but like it feels like kind of a dynamic fight environment because the toy is like spinning around and throwing punches and like, I don't know.
and as we're probably going to talk about in a moment, talking like mad shit to you.
Yeah, for sure.
Before we move on though, there was one other kind of design element that I'd love to get your thoughts on. Cause like generally I think the design is laid out very, very well and leads to like satisfying like long games. The one exception is the out lane on the right side is like weirdly open. So it's like extra wide.
Yeah.
And I don't get it.
I don't know. I remember many times seeing it kind of pop up there and just wondering like, is it going to fall down the out lane or is it going to like hit that little pin and come back in? And I don't know what I was supposed to do there. Maybe you can shake the machine just right to get it to pop back in.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that's the assumption, but like, I'm not sure why they would, maybe they just like, they wanted one because they've got that stopper in the center. They just wanted like one too bad shot for you.
Yeah. And I bet if you play the game enough, you could probably figure out what are the safe shots that never go over there and just avoid that area entirely. I don't think I know though.
Yeah. It's just, for me, it's like an interesting design consideration. Like why, you know, why put it on the right side, but not the left? Like why have it, like what's the, there is nothing as far as I know on the right side, that's like a high value shot that would even tempt you to try and go over there. So I don't know why they would do it, but interesting to call out. Cause I'm not sure. There's like one other machine I could think of that's from the 70s that had like a weird extra wide out lane, but I don't know like why functionally you would do that.
Yeah. It could just be they need somewhere for you to lose. I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe that's it anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's talk scores then. There's a lot to like about this machine, but I feel like there are a lot of like kind of fatal flaws. The design of the machine just feels like it's trying to do too much, like too many mini games, too many like saucer shots that lead to video modes. And the game loop, while kind of interesting, doesn't lead to a lot of like interesting choices. You basically have kind of one thing you're doing and that's it. So I gave it kind of a middle score, three out of five.
We do this out of five. I gave it slightly higher. I think it's a 4 out of 5 design. And for me, it's because a lot of machines that bury in a bunch of video modes are, you know, they're harder to access. And I feel like this game lets a pretty casual amateur player get a chance to get a wide sample of everything. And the mechanics are pretty unique to things you wouldn't see in other pinball machines. So that, you know, it puts it above average, but not in the top 20%.
Yeah, I could be convinced of that. I just think my initial gut reaction was kind of, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the theme. There's so much to talk about here. For one, we've talked already a lot about kind of the boxer toy and the unique kind of training mechanics that are pretty on point. But sure, let's just talk about it right now. There is a major like downside to the theme, and that's that the boxers that you fight, while they all are represented by the same toy on the playfield,
who is himself slightly problematic by being like an Irish stereotype.
Yeah, I think so. And they decided to just say, we discriminated against everyone equally, not equally, but you know, they really kind of like had a scattershot array of stereotypes that were represented both on screen on the dot matrix display and in the audio clips that they played.
Yeah. And like, this is it's problematic. It should have been problematic back then. It is very problematic today, and it made me uncomfortable like each time facing one of the fighters and having to listen to the stereotyped, you know, kind of audio callouts, which I assume, by the way, are all probably done by some like white guy. And so like you're fighting, you know,
probably the same one.
Yeah. You're fighting a Chinese fighter named Bim Bam Boom. And like, it's got, imagine the most horrific kind of Chinese put on accent. And I don't, you know, that's for that reason alone, like makes me like not even want to be like, oh yeah. Like if I was at a bar and I saw that machine, I'd be like, maybe we don't play it, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting because I had played this machine in, you know, in a bar or in like a pinball museum a couple of times before our kind of excursion here to go play it. And I had never seen that character before. And we talked about this. That,
yeah,
like,
I had never seen that one specifically.
That, like, I feel like I saw the same kind of one or two fighters over and over again.
I usually see the Irish stereotype. His name is Knuckles O'Brien.
Yeah, I'd seen the Irish, and I think the Chilean, maybe? There's a...
Yeah, Armando Santiago.
I feel like those are the two that I would always fight. And I didn't realize there's a whole cast of...
Yeah. And most of them, by the way, like, I recognize that I think the designers were trying to make puns that were sort of fighting related. Like I imagine Armando, because he has arm in his name, or Knuckles O'Brien.
Yeah.
And then, but then, like, you start leaning into, you know, when you call someone Bim Bam Boom, like, I assume, like, that's supposed to sort of be a riff on, like, punching sounds. But, like, that is really distilling, like, in ethnicity down to a joke in a way that is not okay.
Yeah. And it's very unfortunate, because I mean, I like so much about this game, and it's just that all of these voice lines, especially, I think, kind of sour me on the whole thing.
Yeah. I'll tell you outright, like, originally, you know, I would have scored this pretty well for, like, a theme point of view, in terms of, like, it's an underground boxing ring in a bar. And so, like, the theme from that perspective kind of hits the mark in a lot of ways, right? There are lots of the video modes are poker. There's, like, a spittoon cleanup thing. There is the multi-brawl, like, multi-ball, like, all of those things, like, tie into fighting and to bars, like, very well. But then the more the fighters came up, and you just saw, like, this, like, carousel of, like, really problematic fighters, like, that hurt the score for me for sure, because it came down to, like, is this a game that I would feel comfortable, like, wanting to show other friends? And the answer is no. Like, I feel a little bit embarrassed playing it in case someone comes over and is like, oh God, what is this guy?
Yeah, I hear you. And, you know, I think did not realize the extent of these characters when we picked the machine. And I'll tell you, like, before we even sat down to start playing it, I kind of filled out my scorecard based on, like, my vague recollections.
Sure.
And I gave it a 5 on the theme, but I could not, like, let that sit after having played it. So I gave it a 1-point penalty for that. I think there's definitely a case to be made that, you know, it should lose more, but I just needed to put something, I think, to kind of express my mixed feelings on the game, that, like, I really like a lot about it and I really don't like a few things.
There's one, you know, I was thinking about this a little bit between playing and coming back to record, that if you had this as a home machine, I think the first thing I do is I change the audio. I change, like, I remove the audio and the call outs for the fighters, and I replace the names with something more generic or
yeah,
or
I wonder
something.
If there is like a homebrew scene that has modified the software in such a way that you can change it. I got to imagine they can do it.
I feel like it could be done. Whether or not it is done, you know, you guys let us know, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, as it stands today, like, oh, I would be, I feel like I'd be embarrassed to have it in a home collection in the state that it came out in. That said, so I guess, do you want me to give my score, or you want to start with yours? So,
yeah, I gave it a 4. Like I said, I started with a 5, but then deducted.
Oh, wow.
Gave it a penalty.
Okay. So still with that, you think it's in a above average pool in terms of theming?
Like I said, there's so much that I like about it. And, you know, you could say that maybe I should deduct more for the problematic parts. That's just what I wrote.
That's fair. And I think, you know, I give it a bigger deduction for that. And that, you know, as much as I liked the tie-in between the bar elements and the fight elements, there was a little bit of theming that felt a little out of place, so especially the extra ball lock, which was like a weird subway train animation.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it. Like, I don't know how that ties into an underground fight scene or a bar. Maybe it's because, like, maybe in theory you're, like, in London or something, and it's supposed to be, like, how you would get to the pub.
I guess I assume New York, but sure
like whatever, some
right?
Metropolitan.
Yeah, I think I can't explain the subway one, but the other bits, I kind of actually liked the fact that it wasn't just a boxing game, that there were these elements of kind of seedy bar culture with, like, poker and the spittoon. Yeah. Like, for whatever reason, I found that kind of, like, interesting.
Yeah, and I agree with that mostly. It just felt like, in ways, it felt a little disjoint. So ultimately, that and the big penalty that I gave it, because the theme does not age or sit well with me, I gave it a 2 out of 5. So I think this is, that especially makes it below average.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Talking about it more, maybe I would go back and change my scores, but they are written in permanent ink on my scorecard. So
fair enough.
Yeah, that's where it is. All right, well, let's talk about the fun and hopefully, you know, end on a more positive note, I suppose. In general, I'll say this, like I liked the game loop of training and fighting. I did. And I think because I wasn't particularly good at it, it stayed kind of fun for me. But I could see that getting kind of boring over time.
Yeah, interesting. I found it to be like a very flow state kind of zen where I not only enjoyed the game loop, it felt like in a way sort of just a way to lose myself in the game in a way that I would keep coming back to. And I also felt like the games, especially probably because of that red stopper actuator, it felt like I was getting a lot of money for, or a lot of value for my money. And so from like that point of view, I feel like it would be a thing that, you know, a beginner pinball player would really enjoy coming back to because, you know, it's not a game that's going to end in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I hear you there. The real positive for me is kind of the novelty factor, which is almost exactly opposite of your kind of like zen flow state perspective. I really like the novelty of the mini games. Like the jump rope was just so much fun. Like I always just felt really happy whenever I got a chance to do it.
Yeah.
The speed bags, I only got up there once and it, like I just botched it completely. But like I would come back to try those things again.
One minor annoyance about that is the speed bag times out. Like after a certain period, like I think I got like 8 or 9 punches in and the ball was still rocking, like where I would be able to keep it bouncing between the gloves. And then it just turns it off and is like, okay, time's up. And that's a little annoying. Cause like, I want to go until I fail
and set the high score. You could go permanently. Like what's that game where you got the ball stuck in between the pop bumpers?
Pinbot. Return of Pinbot.
Yeah, Return of Pinbot or something. Yeah. Yeah, just keep it going forever, man.
Yeah, I mean, don't punish me because I'm good at it. Come on.
We could get you a t-shirt that says that, I think. The only other downside I have is that some of it felt a little arbitrary to me. Like the registry of like headshot versus body shot, I felt sometimes wasn't like what I expected.
Yeah. I wonder if some of that's age of the machine.
It certainly could be. I think a lot of things could come down to the age of the machine. Like we had a hard time getting it up to the balcony for the
speed bag. Yeah.
The speed bag. And I think that just comes down to flipper strength and the coil strength of the flipper.
And maybe making sure the play field and ramps are cleaned and like well lubricated.
Yeah. So that's some of the downside. Yeah. So I got a little frustrated by some of the arbitrary nature of it, but I still gave it a pretty high fun score. I said 4, like this is a machine that I'll probably still, you know, play a couple rounds on anytime I see it.
Yeah. I think, you know, in my heart, I was there with you, but like, I'm knocking this score because of how uncomfortable those stereotypes made me that it like detracted from the fun factor.
For sure.
Like I really enjoyed playing it. So I have to put it at a 3, where I think the fun factor is pretty middle of the road. But you know, if a bar out there or someone has that at home and they were to like change those call outs and change the names to not be problematic, you know, that would certainly come back up easily because I think it is a compelling game loop.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, I guess without further ado, let's get into the score reveals. We played a few games to kind of get familiar with the machine, and then we did kind of a best of 3 competition. And then, spoiler alert, I played 1 extra game. I got a replay, and I'm not going to leave credits on the machine.
I mean, you can't, right? You can't.
And you know, so full disclosure, that was my best game, and we talked about this and said I could count it, but only because you still won.
That's right.
So I'll go first, I guess. My best game was 24,791,740.
Which does come close, but my best game was 28,973,960, which by, I think, a split decision then, makes me the winner of tonight's match. Yeah.
Pound those flippers!